The Eight Immortals Travel East, Chapter 53.
I want you to imagine, just for a second, that you are at the most exclusive, peaceful VIP dinner party imaginable.
Oh, wow. Okay. Setting the scene.
Yeah, exactly. Like,
yeah.
We're talking about absolute luxury here. The kind of event where everyone is, you know, dressed to the nines, the drinks are flowing, and the mood is just perfectly relaxed.
Right. The ultimate high society gathering.
Exactly. So you are at a table surrounded by friends and esteemed guests,
mm-hmm.
and then out of nowhere, the doors do not just open, they are violently kicked down.
Oh, jeez, just totally shattered peace.
Yeah, the music stops dead. And standing in the doorway is a fully armed military strike force, weapons drawn, and they're shouting for you to surrender immediately.
That is terrifying.
Right. But before you even have a chance to raise your hands, you notice something, really unsettling. The people who called in the raid are actually hiding right behind the police, and they're smiling.
Wow. Yeah, that changes everything.
It really does. You realize in a fraction of a second that the system is completely rigged, and you are, well, you're already guilty.
It's the ultimate shattering of safety, really. And it forces this impossible choice on you. I mean, do you submit to an unfair system, or do you fight back and actually become the criminal they are treating you as?
And that impossible choice is exactly what we're unpacking today. So today, our mission is to look at a fast-paced, incredibly high-stakes chapter 53 of the classic Ming Dynasty text, Journey to the East.
Which is such an amazing source.
It really is. For those who might not be familiar, this is a cornerstone text of Chinese mythology. It features gods, demons, and the famous Eight Immortals. But, you know, underneath the magic and the monsters, it is this brilliant dissection of power dynamics.
Absolutely.
We are going to analyze the anatomy of a mythological escalation. We're looking at how a seemingly bureaucratic dispute over environmental destruction and murder rapidly spirals into an all-out, earth-shaking supernatural war. So let us set the scene. We are at the legendary Longhua Banquet. The Eight Immortals are there, drinking and socializing with other heavenly beings. It is supposed to be this time of celebration.
Just a great time.
Right. But then, as we just imagined, the shouting starts outside. The heavenly troops arrive, and they fan out in a single line, completely blocking all the exits.
No way out.
None. Leading them is Marshal Zhao, who is essentially the top law enforcement officer of the Celestial Realm.
Mm-hmm.
He rides in on horseback, blade raised, and he does not mince words.
He really doesn't.
No. He announces he has direct orders from the Jade Emperor himself, the supreme ruler of heaven, and he tells the immortals to step forward and let themselves be bound and arrested.
Just like that.
Just like that. And if they hesitate, he explicitly warns them that the axes and blades will show zero mercy.
You can just picture the sheer panic sweeping through that room. I mean, the text explicitly notes that all the immortals at the banquet turn pale. They are completely caught off guard.
I would be too.
Right. But observe how quickly the Eight Immortals, specifically a figure named Iron Crutch Lai, move past that initial shock. He immediately starts diagnosing the political trap they've just walked into.
Which is wild.
Yeah.
Iron Crutch Lai does not cower behind a table. He instantly deduces what must have happened behind closed doors to lead to this SWAT-style raid.
He realizes they've been outmaneuvered politically by their enemies, the Dragon Kings of the Oceans. So Iron Crutch Lai points out that the Dragon King must have filed a grievance with the Jade Emperor first.
Like a paperwork?
Exactly, paperwork. In the context of the heavenly bureaucracy, this grievance is called a memorial. It's a formal, written, legal petition submitted directly to the throne.
Okay.
So by getting to the ultimate authority first and filing that paperwork, the Dragon King framed the narrative entirely on his terms.
Ah, he got ahead of the story.
He did. Iron Crutch Lee recognizes that because the immortals haven't submitted their own memorial in defense, the bureaucratic machine is automatically treating them as guilty by default.
Okay, let's unpack this, because I am struggling to understand the immortals' logic here.
Yeah.
If the heavenly host is the ultimate police force, and Marshal Zhao is basically the celestial FBI with a warrant from the supreme ruler,
right?
Shouldn't they just surrender? I mean, why not just put your hands up, go downtown, get a celestial lawyer, and sort it out in court?
Well, that assumes the court is neutral, you know?
Yeah.
But the celestial bureaucracy in this text prioritizes procedure over truth. If they let themselves be bound in magical chains and dragged before the Jade Emperor, they are doing so as defeated, humiliated criminals.
Oh, so the optics matter.
The optics are everything. But Lu Dongbin, another one of the Eight Immortals, decides to test the waters of due process anyway. He steps out to negotiate with Marshal Zhao.
What does he say?
He basically says, look, the heavenly general is here. I will ask him to wait just until tomorrow so we can present our side of the story to the Jade Emperor, and then we will accept whatever judgment is handed down.
I mean, that sounds incredibly reasonable. Just give us 24 hours to file our own paperwork.
It's a plea for basic legal fairness. But Marshal Zhao gets furious at the mere suggestion. He refuses, stating that their crimes are way too severe to give them even a moment's grace.
Severe? Like what?
Well, he accuses them of leveling mountains, filling the sea, arson, and mass murder.
Wait, leveling mountains?
Yeah, it is a breathtaking list of allegations. They are literally accused of reshaping the physical geography of the Earth and causing catastrophic loss of life.
Okay, well, here is where I actually have to push back on the Immortals' behalf. Because if you are accused of leveling mountains, the police are not going to let you finish your wine.
That's a fair point.
But Dongbin demands evidence, right? He asks Marshal Zhao, where is the proof that these crimes happened? Who are the witnesses?
And Marshal Zhao's answer is very telling.
Yeah, because Zhao admits that his only basis is the memorial submitted by the Dragon King of the East Sea. So Dongbin rejects it completely, because how can anyone blindly trust a one-sided account from a sworn enemy?
What's fascinating here is that this is the crux of the tension. It represents a massive clash of ideologies. You have Dongbin standing up for the concept of an impartial hearing.
Right.
But Marshal Zhao operates on a completely different wavelength. He represents absolute, unquestioning executive authority. He literally tells Dongbin, I only follow the Jade Emperor's orders. I don't care about your right or wrong.
I don't care about your right or wrong.
Yeah.
That has to be one of the most chilling lines in the entire text. He completely decouples his actions from morality or truth.
Exactly. For Marshal Zhao, the command itself is the only truth that matters.
And the moment he says that out loud, he just raises his blade and charges directly at Dongbin. The negotiation is officially dead.
The bureaucratic system offered absolutely no safety valve. When you have an enforcer who openly admits that innocence or guilt are irrelevant to his job, reason and dialogue fail entirely. The tension just snaps.
But Dongbin, surprisingly, does not immediately draw his weapon to fight back. He actually avoids the clash and runs around the formation trying to de-escalate.
Which shows remarkable restraint.
It does. But his attempt at peace is completely shattered a moment later by something happening on the sidelines. Zhongli Quan, another immortal, is watching this unfold, and he spots the visual provocation that turns this from an arrest into a total bloodbath.
Right. He looks past Marshal Zhao and sees the true instigators of all this violence.
He sees the Dragon King's army lurking right behind the heavenly troops. It confirms every single suspicion Iron Crutch Lee had. It proves the police are acting as muscle for a private vendetta.
It's the SWAT team scenario you mentioned earlier.
Exactly. And in a fit of absolute rage at seeing the Dragon King hiding behind the Jade Emperor's military, Zhongli grabs his weapon and steps directly into the fray to protect his friend.
This specific visual, the accuser hiding behind the shield of the law enforcement officer, destroys any remaining illusion of impartiality.
Completely.
If law enforcement arrives with your sworn enemy standing in their ranks, well, surrendering does not lead to justice. It leads to an ambush. Zhongli's intervention is the spark that sets off a highly specific escalating chain reaction.
Let us unpack this combat, because it is not just a chaotic brawl. It actually unfolds like a terrifying high-stakes chess match.
It's very structured at first.
Right. So Marshal Zhao sees Zhongli step out, so he drops his pursuit of Dongbin and engages Zhongli instead. The text notes they fight for 200 rounds without a clear winner.
200 rounds.
200 rounds. But then, from behind the heavenly army, the East Sea Dragon King himself charges out to tip the scales.
The hidden force is finally forced to reveal itself.
Exactly. So to counter him, Lu Dongbin jumps back into the battle, fighting the East Sea Dragon King for 20 rounds. Then, the South Sea Dragon King charges out, so Han Jianzi steps up from the immortal side to block him.
It just keeps escalating.
It really does. Finally, the floodgates open completely. All four Sea Dragon Kings charge out at once, and on the immortal side, Lung Kai-hee and He Xiangu step up to hold the line against them.
I really want to focus on the mechanics of this battle, because it explains why this conflict is so devastating. This isn't just, you know, people hitting each other with swords.
Far from it.
Right. You have the Dragon Kings who command the oceans and wield immense elemental magic. They're summoning storms, manipulating water pressure, actively trying to drown the battlefield.
Right.
And on the other side, you have the eight immortals, each possessing unique divine artifacts and cultivation techniques that are designed to subvert the natural order.
I'm just picturing the sheer sensory overload of this. The sky turning black, drums beating from the heavenly host, flags waving wildly in the supernatural wind.
It's cinematic.
It really is.
Mm-hmm.
You have infantry and cavalry clashing while tidal waves meet magical barriers. The dust and smoke rising up into the sky are so thick it blocks out the sun. And this battle rages from noon all the way to mid-afternoon.
3 solid hours of earth-shattering combat. But does the Dragon King's presence behind the heavenly troops actually validate the Immortals' refusal to surrender?
I mean, it certainly seems to justify their paranoia.
Yeah, and what is truly remarkable is the perfect deadlock it creates. It's a perfect balance. The guests at the Longwa banquet who are watching this from the sidelines are secretly amazed.
They're just watching this happen.
Yeah. They are witnessing 2 massive supernatural coalitions. You have the mandate of heaven combined with the fury of the oceans on one side against the combined mystical prowess of the 8 immortals on the other.
And no one is winning?
Exactly. The magics perfectly negate each other. Fire meets water, force meets deflection. From noon to mid-afternoon, neither side can gain a single inch.
But a standoff of that magnitude simply cannot last forever. The sheer amount of energy being expended means something has to give. And, you know, it is rarely a grand, brilliant strategy that tips the scales in a balanced conflict like this. It is usually a chaotic, unforeseen accident.
The unpredictability of the battlefield always favors chaos over order.
Always. Right in the middle of this epic, world-bending clash, there is a loud crash in the formation. Zhongli's horse suddenly trips on the uneven ground and collapses.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it literally throws Zhongli flat onto his back. He is completely disoriented and vulnerable. Marshal Zhao sees this opening, spurs his horse forward, raises his blade, and prepares to deliver the lethal blow to the helpless immortal.
It is the moment the entire battle has been building toward. The perfect balance of power is about to be permanently broken by a mundane physical accident.
Tripping horse.
Right. Notice the vulnerability here. These are divine beings capable of reshaping geography, but they are still heavily reliant on their physical mounts and the momentum of the charge.
And that vulnerability leads to my absolute favorite detail in this entire story. Here's where it gets really interesting. Iron Crutch Lee, who have been analyzing the battlefield this whole time, sees Zhongli fall.
He's the tactician.
He is. He sneaks up from behind Marshal Zhao. Now, he doesn't cast a massive fireball. He doesn't summon a meteor or use some complex incantation. He simply raises his iron crutch and he smacks Marshal Zhao squarely on the wrist.
Just right on the wrist. It is brutally practical.
I love comparing this to a gritty, unglamorous bar fight tactic. It highlights the desperation of the moment. When your friend is half a second away from being decapitated, you do not have time to channel the cosmic energy of the universe.
You really don't.
You use the physics of a heavy piece of metal hitting a fragile joint. It is a desperate, violent whack to the wrist, and it works perfectly. Marshal Zhao's hand goes completely numb. He drops his divine weapon right under the dirt, and he instantly panics, turns, and flees.
That single tactical disruption is all it takes to completely shatter the illusion of an organized military campaign.
It's incredible.
It really is. The heavenly troops were operating on the assumption of absolute superiority. Their authority was entirely dependent on their leader's momentum. So the moment Marshal Zhao drops his weapon and runs, the chain of command dissolves instantly.
It just falls apart like a house of cards. Iron Crutch Lee pulls Zhongli up off the ground, and the immortals immediately press their advantage. Without Marshal Zhao leading them, the Dragon King's forces suffer a massive defeat.
Complete collapse.
Yeah, because they are a bureaucracy. They don't know how to function without their manager. They break formation and scatter in every direction. The immortals chase the fleeing army all the way to the edge of the sea before finally turning back in triumph.
It perfectly illustrates how fragile military discipline can be when it is built purely on intimidation rather than genuine loyalty. I mean, they transform from a terrifying disciplined army into a routed, fleeing mob the second the illusion of invincibility is broken.
They win the battle. The immortals chase off the heavenly police and the Dragon Kings, and they return to the Longwa banquet as victors. But as anyone who has ever navigated a complex system knows, winning a battle is not the same as winning a war.
Oh, definitely not.
Surviving the immediate crisis is not the same thing as surviving the fallout. We have to shift from the incredible high of this battlefield victory back to the sober, chilling reality of the banquet table.
The adrenaline wears off, the dust settles, and the brutal logic of the celestial bureaucracy returns.
Right. So the immortals are holding their wine glasses, catching their breath, congratulating each other on surviving. But Zheng Guolao, another immortal, brings the mood crashing right back down to earth.
He's the buzzkill, but he's right.
He acts as the voice of harsh reality. He points out to the group that, sure, they won the fight today and stayed alive. But in doing so, they have officially, physically, defied a direct decree from the Jade Emperor.
Yeah.
They attacked his top marshal. They routed his personal troops.
The psychological weight of this realization is immense. They have transitioned from being suspects accused of crimes to actively committing high treason against the highest authority in the universe.
And Guolao uses a specific, incredible idiom to describe their situation. He tells the group they're in a riding a tiger situation.
Riding a tiger.
Yeah. I am obsessed with this phrase. Think about the physics of riding a tiger. You might feel incredibly powerful for a moment sitting on top of this apex predator, but you are in a terrifying, completely unsustainable position.
You're stuck.
Exactly. Huh? You cannot safely dismount because the second your feet touch the ground, the tiger will turn around and eat you. And you certainly cannot apologize to the tiger to make it stop. You are stuck moving forward in a highly dangerous state of permanent escalation.
It is the ultimate trap. I mean, they fought to defend their right to a fair trial, but the very act of defending themselves ensured they will never, ever get one.
Wow, yeah.
Guolao warns them that tomorrow, because they embarrassed the heavenly court today, an even larger, more furious, completely unyielding army will arrive. They have passed the point of no return. The legal avenue is permanently closed.
So the panic starts to set in all over again, and it's heavier this time. Guolao is literally begging the other guests at the banquet to intervene, to support them, to use their political capital to calm the Jade Emperor down. Complete desperation. But just as the despair hits its absolute peak, a new figure speaks up. The ultimate wild card.
I love this part.
It's so good. It's a guest who has been sitting quietly at the banquet this entire time, just drinking and watching the drama unfold. The great sage equal to heaven, Sun Wukong.
His entrance into the narrative at this specific moment is just brilliant.
Sun Wukong just laughs at their panic. He tells the immortals to relax. He says, look, I might not be the most talented guy, but I'm willing to hold the line for you.
So casual.
And then he makes this incredibly casual but terrifying promise. He guarantees that if the heavenly troops dare to return tomorrow, he will personally ensure that not a single piece of their armor makes it back.
He is calmly promising the absolute annihilation of the Jade Emperor's forces.
For listeners who might not know who Sun Wukong is, why does a guy making a promise like that at a dinner party actually carry weight? Wait, who is this guy?
Okay, so Sun Wukong is the Monkey King. He is the most famous rebel in Chinese mythology. Long before this banquet ever took place, he single-handedly went to war against the entire celestial bureaucracy.
Oh, wow.
He fought this exact same heavenly army to a standstill, and he completely embarrassed the Jade Emperor. He possesses unimaginable strength, immortality, and just a total disregard for authority.
So he's got a resume.
He's got a resume. So when he promises to slaughter the heavenly troops, it is not an empty boast from a drunk guest. It is a historical precedent. The immortals know he can actually do it.
And their reaction is what blows my mind. The immortals, who just hours ago were begging for a fair legal trial and offering to submit paperwork, just thank Sun Wukong repeatedly. And then they casually go back to drinking their wine.
Like nothing happened.